Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Let's watch a movie. And then let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Because we forgot the special glasses. Is it too late to get special glasses? I didn't know. The whole thing's a blur. I need the special glasses. Sir, there's no special glasses. Then what's the blur about? Why can't I see things clearly?
In a world in which you're born, it seems like a story.
We're on a boat.
You're on a boat.
There's a beginning and an end.
Well, here's the beginning of our trip.
Yep, on an airplane.
But what if it wasn't a story?
I sure do like the ocean.
Me too, man. Me too.
What if it was a weird time poem that just was?
Wow, what is this place?
I don't know. Let's go back to the boat.
Butchie Spinoza is the traveling man in Time is Weird.
Set the time machine to a time before I agreed to be in that movie.
Sure, Butchie, but why?
Because it was a dumb idea. I don't need to be in a fiction about my life, I'm living it. And it gives the wrong impression.
Like when they double-stamp the date on a nickel.
Life isn't cinematic. It isn't made up of scenes. Life isn't a story, it's an abstract poem. If you make it into a story, people think it has to have some kind of meaning instead of just experiencing it. Yeah, I'm done with show business. I'm taking a fate mulligan.
I hear you. I was in a school play once. It was based on the picture of Dorian Gray. I played the colonel who finds the monkey's paw.
I think you're a little mixed up.
That was a long time ago. But I remember thinking, hey, in real life, it's not so easy as cutting off an animal's hand just so there'll be a realistic painting of yourself that ages and grants wishes and gives you a friend in the country named Bunbury.
I'll never figure you out.
I like movies and all, but I agree, that's not our world.
Yeah, my experience is not up for critique. I refuse to be reduced to two dimensions when I am a fully formed nine-dimensional being.
Okay. Well, I'll take us back in time. So, by the way, what was the name of the famous director who wanted you in their movie?
I think Lunch.
Launch? Okay.
I said Lunch, not... Oh, okay, yeah.
What?
No, Launch is fine.
All right, here we go.
And cut.
I told the director I'd speak to you about his project and try to convince you to do it. I know you already turned him down.
Yeah, I'm starting to rethink that. Maybe it wouldn't be so bad being in a movie. What if it turns out to be a hit?
But that's not you. You don't need that kind of attention, man. You're all about personal experience and life itself being art.
Yeah, but maybe in this instance it might be the right decision. They want a time traveler and... That's me.
And me too. Hey, let's not forget whose machine it is.
Who knows whose machine it is? It's mine. So possessive. You want to help humanity or you want credit?
Sorry, you're right. Anyway, so you're going to do it now then?
I don't know. I know you want to be in the movie and they don't want you even a little bit, and that must be very painful for you, so I'll consider it.
Well, that's good. The director will be very happy about it, at least.
I'd love to go to Cannes. I'd look good on the red carpet.
Hey, guys, I dropped a can on the red carpet. It's now a red and green carpet. Sorry, spinach. I was playing Popeye and things got out of hand.
Playing Popeye?
I cosplay Popeye at FlasherCon. Also, I found your bimbo costume, Butch.
Sweet!
So, there's a famous director who wants Butchie to star in his movie.
Are you going to do it, Butch?
I'm thinking about it. Part of me says that... No, you know, that life itself is a movie, is art. But then I found out it makes Hardy jealous, so now I'm torn.
Butchie.
I spoke to Butchie about the project, and he did not seem interested. I was hoping that you might speak to him and get him to see our viewpoint. On this. I think that he would be perfect for the movie. And you might be able to convince him in a way that I was not.
Well, Butchie's pretty stubborn, and if he doesn't want to do something, he won't do it. Now, I, on the other hand, am available, and I'm also the original time traveler. Time Machine is actually mine, and I would love to do it.
Well, I think Butchie has a particular personality that would really convey the idea that we are trying to describe in this film.
Right.
And he has those qualities that I think would depict the time traveler in such a way that people would identify with it, but also be slightly confused by it, as if it were a dream.
Right. Oh, that sounds great. That sounds great. And that is what I experience as a time traveler myself. But I don't know if he's going to be able to do it. I am free. Love.
I'm really interested in Butchie.
Okay.
For this particular experiment.
All right.
And it is an experiment because we're not sure where it's all going. It's more of a beginning of an idea that's yet to fully form.
Well, I'll, I'll speak to him. That's all I can say. But he's a very stubborn fella. Unlike me, who is very, I just go with the flow. You know what I'm saying? So, but I will speak to him for you.
Butchie, listening. I have an idea for a film. And the idea is that a man is traveling through time. Along the way, he meets various characters who teach him about what it was like in that particular period. It is part of an experiment to better understand how our actions affect others and ourselves. I would like you to star in the film and play the part of the time traveler.
Here's the thing. I already do that in real life.
I see.
So what's the point of fictionalizing it?
Well, we would make a film, a sort of piece of art, a moving painting of your adventures in the time machine.
Again, I do that. I live it. Why make a movie of it?
Then others could see it and understand what you're doing.
I guess I'm stuck on the why. Why would I want to if I literally am living this? Other people do watch me. Somebody was watching me in the grocery store the other day because I was helping myself to grapes, which they totally allow for. They budget samples into the cost, so it ain't stealing.
I understand.
Look, I'd love to be a movie star, but the ultimate movie is one's own life. It's sort of immersion art. You're in it.
You are soaking in it, Butchie.
I am. You should do more commercials. Anyway, I have next door to no interest in your project, even though I think you are a director and famous.
Thank you anyway, Butch.
You're welcome.
Life is a movie. With a beginning, middle, and end. It has a clear storyline. We are sure who the characters are and what motivates them. We know who the good guys and bad guys are. Things happen for reasons. It doesn't just descend into chaos and confusion, leaving us baffled about what's happening, making us wonder if there's any real plot or moral or what we should be doing, and that if life is a movie, it isn't the kind that you're used to. My grandfather used to take movies. He had one of those 8mm home movie cameras. Do you remember those? It was silent because it was an old-timey one, and he would take
movies of our life, right? And one of my favorite things to do would be get out that projector. And those movies, they were a little tiny. They were about 3 minutes long. And they were about the size of a coaster. And you'd set up the movie projector, which smelled wonderful. It smelled like ozone and what I imagine Edison's hair to smell like. "Why are you smelling my hair?"
"Because you stole my invisibility hair cream," said Tesla.
There's a very famous picture of Tesla smelling Edison's hair. And we don't see that because the government is keeping it from us. But I'd hook up this movie camera and I'd get out his old movies. And there was a couple in particular I remember very clearly. One of them was shot before I was born. And it was basically just the coastline of Florida shot out the driver's side window. He would hold the camera up. And it was the undeveloped coast of Florida looking at the ocean. It was just water going by, just a horizon like that. Just beach and water, and occasionally you'd see a tree blur by. Now, if I was making a film of my life, that would be the first reel. Just some kind of blurry horizon. You can't tell what's going on. Just a vast ocean of possibility. What is that? I don't even know what I'm looking at. Reel one. Another reel was one that was purchased on vacation in Florida. There's a very famous Florida attraction called Wikiwashi. I don't know if you've ever been there. It's still around. And you go there, and you go into this theater, and there's a big tank, a big water tank, and women dress up as mermaids and swim around in it and perform shows, like a theater show. And they're not really mermaids. I don't mean to shatter the illusion. They're really secretly sucking on air hoses behind rocks and things like that. But they would put on shows, and I went there as a kid, and my grandfather bought in the store, the souvenir store there, you could buy a pre-made silent 8mm movie of one of the performances, and it was Wizard of Oz. And so I would watch that as a kid. We didn't have videotapes and all, so I'd watch that. And it was just 3 minutes long. I'm sure the show was actually longer. And so it was cut together in a weird way. You couldn't even tell what was going on. It didn't even seem like Wizard of Oz. But there was one very memorable scene, and that is the wizard was depicted as an underwater giant mechanical wizard head, which coincidentally is also the name of my stoner metal band. But it was very frightening. This big head would come out. It didn't make any noise like that. The only noise was the flap, flap, flap of the movie projector. And this strange scene with these characters, these mermaids, I didn't know what was going on. And they were swimming around. It was very odd and kind of frightening, a little like a nightmare. That would be the second reel of the movie of my life. Now, there were a lot of other movies of relatives, mainly sitting around doing nothing, as if they were just sort of still photographs with a little bit of motion, mainly my great-grandmother waving her hand as if to say, "Don't photograph me with the moving pictures." She's smiling. I think she secretly liked it. But it was like that. Great-great-aunts. I still had great-great-aunts alive when I was young. My family, I didn't realize at the time, I was born into a very old family, and so most of them died. I have very few living relatives, but I had a lot of older ones. My great-grandmother was living, and her sisters and everything, and it didn't occur to me that, gosh, there's no younger relatives around. And that was a sad time there when they all sort of passed away at once. Not literally at once. They took their time. They went in order, opposite birth order. My great-grandmother, being the oldest, she went last. You know, when you're taking care of people, you want to die last. So that would be, I think, the third reel. Strange relatives, people I don't know. I'm told they're my family. I don't really know who they are. I just see pictures of them, vague pictures of them waving. I guess there's also were movies of me as a child. And even when I was little, let's say maybe 8 years old, didn't recognize myself as an infant. It seemed alien, like it was somebody else. Who am I watching? Is that me? And they would have to tell you, yeah, that's baby you. You might not know. I mean, if you were just happened upon them, say, you wouldn't maybe know that, recognize your own baby pictures. And yet, it was you. Very strange, isn't it? We might not even be able to recognize ourselves in pictures unless someone says, yes, that was you. Well, I'm going to have to believe you. But this movie is really shaping up
to be something very strange. I wish I had edited it together. We had a little moviola, a little tiny editing machine where you could splice things together with tape. That's the way it was done in the old days. We didn't have computers and everything. I mean, we did, and they were large and took up entire rooms, and we were using them to send men to the moon, I imagine. Or maybe not. Maybe they were using slide rules to send men to the moon. That's how we used to do it. They actually sent men to the moon using slide rules. How? They would shrink the man down very small, and then they would take the slide rule and they'd flip it like that, and you can really get some momentum if you, because they bend, they have flexibility, and boom, like that, and we'd flick people onto the moon, because the moon is actually not that far away. It's just, if you close one eye, you can actually touch it. Reach up in the night sky. Do not do this with the naked eye. Put a little dress, put a little hat on your eye like that to protect it from your imagination. Because, you know, once your imagination gets in there into the picture, gosh knows what could happen. Things become what they call nonlinear. We're used to, in stories, one thing leading to another. Is that what life is like, Hardy? I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, one thing does lead to another, but a bunch of other stuff, too. So we don't know. I mean, look at, I've been down on the microscopic level, and boy, things are bumping into each other all the time, and it's hard to keep track of things. You go, oh, these molecules, what am I even looking at? And so you're just looking at water molecules bumping into each other. Can you imagine, on a larger scale, we bump into people all the time and cause things? Oh, my goodness, it's hardly a movie. It's hardly a story. Now, I like stories as much as the next person. I don't like them. All right, the next one over from that. I don't either. All right, two people down. That fella or lady, they like stories. I do. All right, you and me, right? Am I right? I do like stories, but I don't want to confuse them with my own life because I know there's clearly not a beginning, middle, and end. I think the illusion is I was born. Oh, yes, I was born, but I was born, what they say in the Latin, in the middle of things. There was stuff going on before, and there'll be stuff going on afterwards. And it's my perspective that leads me to think that I am the star of this movie. I don't mind being the star of this movie. I like it. I just wish there was catering. I wish that people would bring me, like cater, that's where we get that, cater to one's whims. What's a whim? It's a race of people that don't exist anymore, the whims. It's like Franks or something. And coincidentally, we would bring catered Franks for the whims. I know this is very, history was never my strong suit. My strong suit is actually made of chainmail. I made it for a reenacting group that I was in. And we would get together and say, boy, I wish it was medieval times and my teeth were falling out and I only lived to 30 and we were hitting each other with swords. It's very exciting. Instead, we're living in this crazy time with what? Computers and transporters? Oh, we don't have transporters yet. We might, though. Hey, a child listening to this show now might be the one that invents some sort of device that eliminates life from the planet. We don't know who's listening. We can't pick who is listening. And that's why we know it's not a story, because we don't even know who all the characters are. Could you imagine? If you were trying to make a story alive, just introducing the characters would be infinite, because as you're introducing them, more are being born. What kind of movie is that? I have no idea what's going on. I've seen a lot of experimental films. They say they're experimental because they're not sure they're going to work. What is work? Well, what's the purpose of a film or story? Is it to entertain? Is it to edify? Is it to just help pass the time? It could be to confuse or to baffle. We have all sorts of genres. I just made that word up to help me describe things, of films, like horror films and mirror films, and they have ones that are comedies, there are ones that are apparent comedies that don't work, pandering comedies, sophisticated comedies. We have, what are some more, is it science fiction, science fantasy, regular fantasy, fiction fantasy. We have, right now, we have mainly superhero movies, different kinds of superhero movies, and sequels. Now, sequels are very interesting, There never used to be a lot. I don't remember even what the first sequel was. Was it Godfather 2 or something? I don't remember. But I don't think they had them a lot back in the day. That Battle of Algiers 2 is fantastic. But they didn't really have those. And now it makes you acutely aware that when you die, you will be missing something in a series, a sequel. You know, you're never going to be... Because you know they're going to make another movie, 2, 3, or 4 or something, that you're never going to see. And life is like that too, isn't it? You're never going to see the sequels, the end. It just keeps going until it doesn't. Oh, I do like movies, though. That's all I'm going to talk about today is movies. Well, how is that going to help me? Well, a movie can be a lot of things. It can be a distraction. You say, I'm going to take my mind off it and go to the movies. Where I can, my feet will stick to the floor and it's going to smell funny and other people are going to talk and fart and get in my way and annoy me and everything. I love it. Doing things communally. Being aware that, gosh, I am not alone. It is wonderful to be in a group of people reacting to a movie. Now, I like watching them alone, but it's also interesting watching them in a crowded theater. I remember a couple memorable theater moments. I saw Blair Witch Project. I remember distinctly at the end of that movie, everybody going, what? Boo! Oh, come on! Like that. It was beautiful. It was everybody in the theater. Or seeing Alien for the first time, hearing people scream when the thing pops out of the guy's chest. Did I just ruin it for you? I won't tell you what pops out of his chest. He was a turkey, and it was one of those little red things that lets you know it's done. Oh, turkey's done. Isn't that awful? Stick something in a... At least it's dead. At least it's a carcass of a creature. It's remains. I like cooking up some remains. We're going to cook up some today. I got some remains, a carved up creature. We're going to eat it. That sounds barbaric, doesn't it? Well, maybe we're Barbaries, you know? And maybe we like to coast. I like it. That's where the expression comes from. I'm going to coast like a Barbary. And I find often I am Barbary. What does that mean? It means that I like to stand behind you while you're sitting and talk to you. Just like a barber would. You're sitting in a chair and I'm touching your hair, pretending to cut it, going snip, 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 rubbing some Tesla invisibility hair cream in there and saying, how's your day going? Let me tell you about all my bizarre political, social opinions. Blah, 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 while you watch the Country Music Channel. That's the barbers I remember. Actually, we didn't have TVs back in the day. But I do remember this. My grandfather would take me to a barber. He was sort of old-timey. And at the end of the haircut, I would get an electronic head massage, and he would have this device that he would put on his hand. And it looked like, I don't know, a mixer or something like that. Not a sound mixer. That'd be funny. It looked like a mixing board. No, it had was a big electrical device, like a large pill or something, and then these springy straps that went over his hand, so you wore it like that. And then it vibrated. It put it on my head, and it vibrates your scalp, and again, reeked of ozone, that electrical burning smell that's just, I go, what is that? Again, what is that? And it's wonderful, but it's the smell of my youth. Things don't make it as much anymore. I guess they've perfected things, or they don't have, like, bare wires and stuff, but we used to. And I'd know that electronic head massage at the end of the haircut. And I loved it because I was a little kid and I was being treated like a grown-up. You know? Everything but the shave. Shave you, sir?
Yes, why, I do need a shave.
I loved it. I wanted to be a grown-up already. Little did I know that I didn't want to be grown-up. That it was wonderful to be taken care of. And it was wonderful that I didn't have to interact with a world that I was unfamiliar with, that scared me, that I didn't understand, that appeared to me to be a bunch of silent 8mm movies strung together in a nonsensical way. Now, I became used to this at some point in my life. I became used to the fact that my life wasn't going in a traditional story arc, that things were happening to me that were unexpected, that I wasn't following in the footsteps of my ancestors, of my family, that other things were happening to me that I couldn't predict. And it didn't seem like a story to me. So I thought, this is something else. And then I started to study poetry. And I would read poems and I would think, well, I don't know what's happening in this poem. Maybe nothing. Maybe it's just a bunch of feelings. Maybe it's a bunch of impressions. And it's sort of saying something, isn't it? But it doesn't have a clear beginning and a clear ending like that. It's this wonderful moment, isn't it? Oh, I love having these moments with you. I'm glad you came over. I realize you haven't said anything yet. Don't feel as if you need to speak. I would go to the barber and the dentist, and both, you don't really get a word in. One is because there's hands in your mouth, and other because, well, my barber would keep the extra tools and the combs and the scissors and everything in my mouth. He'd say, here, hold these in your mouth. My sterilizing jar is broken. I was gesticulating wildly and knocked it over. So your mouth seems clean. Here, hold this. And it was one of those pair of scissors that has that little extra finger rest on it. I don't know why that is. Why don't all scissors have that little extra finger rest? It's so convenient. It looks like the little finger rest on a trumpet, doesn't it? And both, you put both haircutting scissors and trumpet are things that you put in your mouth. What a coincidence. So I love to be spoken to by some voice like that. It's almost like maybe that's how people got the idea of God. You know, they were sitting in a barber or dentist chair, and they go, somebody's talking to me. And I can't see who it is, because in the case of the dentist chair, they put a blinding white light in front of you. This is where a lot of people also get their near-death experiences. It's that crazy white blinding light at the dentist's office that's put in front of your head. It's like what they call Clegg lights or something on a movie set. Have you ever been in a movie? I haven't. Well, maybe yet. I would love to be in one. I don't know that I would or not. You know, it's when you see them, it feels like, oh, that person is immersed in there. They're pretending they get to be Captain Superdupe or something like that, flying around. But I don't think that's the reality of it. I think it's very much different than that. They just sit around on the set, you know, knitting or thinking, do I need to take another pill? And then they call you and you do something briefly awkward in front of a green screen, and then you go and you sit back down again. I think that's more like it. Now, I don't know. It's not like theater. I say theater. I don't really speak that way. I say theater. I don't know anybody says theater. I guess my friend Jed Clampett does, but I don't know anybody talks the old-timey talk anymore, unless they're putting on a bit. But people could say theater. I'm wrong about that. I'm sure they are. I'm just not bumping into them as much as I used to. Why? I don't know. Maybe I'm not going out. I'm not leaving the house enough. I'm in a very, very dull movie about a man sitting in a basement talking into what looks to be a microphone. But it's not clear in the movie whether the microphone is on or not, or whether it's connected to anything, or whether his voice is really going out into the ether. Did you say ether? Yes, I got a... I was being asphyxiated like that by the ether rag. I got somebody slipped me a Mickey Finn once. Oh, he's so good. Didn't he do, they're New Zealand artists, aren't they? The Finns? I might be wrong. They might be a race of people from Northern Europe. Either that or they're a musical New Zealand family. I don't always remember. I do remember. Let's correct that. I remember. I just don't know what it is. Like, I have information that is in my head, and I remember it. I just can't link it to anything else. It seems to be separate. It seems to be drawn out from the story, a sort of sub-story. And I have a lot of those. I don't know what they are. Now, I do like stories. Somebody say, are you a storyteller? Well, in my family, that meant to lie. You're telling a story. That meant a lie. And stories are a lie in a way. Because even if you're purporting to say something that happened, to tell a story, you have to leave out parts. A story is something trimmed. It's something cut. It's like saying, here's flowers that were growing in the yard. No, you cut off one of the flowers. There's something missing. There's something missing. Those flowers are connected to everything else that's alive. You've just separated it out now. You've cut it off and taken it away. The big picture is big. It's vast. Anytime that we just snip something out of it, it's like that movie, The Magic Christian, with Peter Sellers and Ringo Starr. They have money and they do things to annoy people. One of them, they buy a masterpiece, and then after they buy it, they just cut the nose out and take the nose. That's what it's like to tell a story in a way. It's like cutting the nose out of a masterpiece. There's other things going on, and so you just have that, and you say, well, this is what it's about. It isn't. The nose is connected to a face, is connected to a scene, is connected to a room. Oh, the connections go on, and in this case, they are possibly infinite or virtually infinite. Is the universe infinite? It is to you, because you're small. So it seems it just go on and on. You can't experience it all. If there's a number you can't count to, it's virtually infinite. It goes on as long as it has to, right? Your life is not a fixed length. I mean, it is a fixed length, but it isn't. You don't have a certain length promised to you. And we have this idea in general, oh, we have a youth, we have a middle age, and we have a senescence, which always seems to me like an odor. Like, I'm getting a senescence. No, that means elderliness, which also has an odor to it, a beautiful, wonderful, distinct one. But, you know, that's not the way it is always. When I was young, I had some playmates die. There was a family that lived across the street from me, and they had children that were, a couple of them were younger than me, and a couple of them, one of them was older than me. And the three that were around my age or younger died in a plane crash with their family. The only one who survived was the older child, and I never saw him again. And then he, 10 years later, died in a plane crash. I know it sounds like I'm making that up, but it's absolutely true. I'm not going to mention the family. They're real people. And so I would play with them on the street, you know, how kids do, and ride bikes and do stuff like that. And, you know, one day I'd heard that they died. And they were probably like 8 and 10 and 12 or 13 or something at the time. The three children had perished and their parents. And I remember thinking, because my grandfather had just died shortly before that, at the age of 70, how different lifespans were. And yet they had all lived 100% of their life. There was no guarantee. And I thought, is that tiny life of 10 years, how is that, is it better to live 70 years, 80 years, 90 years? Is that a fuller life? I was very confused. It was something that stuck with me my whole life. The idea of lifespans, of youthful deaths, what do they mean? Is my long, stupid, confusing life better than that child's small one? I don't know. It's still, like I said, 100% of your life. Did time move differently for that child? I don't know. But see, I like being confused in the way, even though it scares me. I went to a nursery with my grandfather one time, the kind that sells plants, not the kind that sells babies. And wait, hang on now. There's not one that's, I mean the kind that takes care of babies. But this one sells plants and also baby plants, so I guess in a way. And I was there and we were walking around and I saw my grandfather in his white dress shirt kneeling in front of a stand of seeds and looking over the seeds. And I walked up behind him and I put my hand on his back and I said, hey, what you looking for? What you gonna get? And he turned around and I looked at his face and it wasn't my grandfather. And it's not like I was hallucinating. It literally was not my grandfather. It was some other guy. And I was taken aback and I was embarrassed and I was frightened. And for that moment right there, the whole world sort of shattered and went weird and wobbly on me. I thought, I was sure that this was my grandfather.
My world was stable. I thought I knew what was going on, that he was going to buy some seeds in here. It's some strange man, and now that I see him, he doesn't look anything like my grandfather. How could I have made that mistake? And that's something that stuck with me. And when I did see my grandfather, I was relieved, but I had also had the foundation of my experience shaken a little bit, like an earthquake. When you think the ground is stable and you realize, wow, things aren't as stable as I think. They're constantly moving. I may never get a handle really on what's going on. And if I do think I know, I might be fooling myself. Yes, I might be fooling myself if I think that I know this story. I hear lots of people that are very confident, and sometimes, frankly, I get jealous of them that they have such a finite, sure worldview. So yes, this the world is like this, it's like that. You do this, this happens, and they really know. And in your heart you go, they can't possibly know. And when you confront them, they make you feel like a fool because they know and you don't. And you know, it's hard to argue from the position of not knowing, because I personally, and a lot of people, are kind of quick to say, I don't know. I also like to say, I was wrong. That wasn't my grandfather. I did not suddenly pretend that that was my grandfather so as to save face. I guess I could have. I said, yes, you're definitely my grandfather. I am not wrong. I couldn't be wrong. There's no way I was wrong. So I'm saying your grandfather. I'm going home with you, whoever you are. No. I said, oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I thought you were somebody else. I was wrong. Now that way I got to go home with my real grandfather because I admitted I was wrong. Is it so hard to admit you're wrong? That you don't know? People do this with art and movies all the time. They will see a movie or they'll see some people piece of art and they'll be baffled by it. What's going on? I don't even know what's going on. And yet I think I know what a story is. I think I know what art is. Therefore, this must suck. And the person who made it must be on drugs, because I don't get it. Now then they stop looking, because it doesn't fit the worldview they've already come up with. So they're going to go home with the wrong grandpa, because they've refused to admit that maybe they were wrong or didn't know. They can't say, I don't know. They can't say, I was wrong. Now, the way I came up was, you have to admit you're wrong because there's right and wrong, and sometimes you mess up, and sometimes you must say, I didn't know that, or I did that wrong. Show me the right way. Oh, what a terrible trap it is when you think you're right all the time. What a terrible trap it is when you can't admit that you're wrong, that you made a mistake. I believe in redemption. I have changed constantly my whole life. I hope for the better, but I know that I've changed, that my beliefs have changed, that I've become a more open person, that I've become kinder than I was. Now, I don't want to be judged necessarily for my past when I maybe wasn't kind, but I accept that there's consequences for what I did. Consequences and redemption aren't the same thing. You can do something horrible and there can be consequences that you cannot stop, because one thing leads to another, and once those dominoes start to fall, there they go. But you could be forgiven for knocking them over. You could free your heart. You could say, well, I'm not going to knock over more dominoes now, I know. I like to eavesdrop. I'm sorry, I do. If I'm sitting at a restaurant, it's impossible for me to not hear the loud-talking person at the table next to me. And the other day, I was having breakfast with a friend, and both of us were in stunned silence because we were listening to the conversation next to us. And it was a young man and a young woman. And the young man could not stop talking in a droning, condescending manner. He went on and on and on, stringing clichés together. And the young woman couldn't get a word in edgewise. And he just kept telling her about some kind of business idea and how he'd been wronged in the past or something like that. And he kept saying things like, and at the end of the day, and yes, that's the $1 million question, and blah, 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 blah.
And at one point, he said this, which really fascinates me. He said, "Yes, at that point, I saw the dominoes on the wall." And I'd really never heard that. I've seen the writing on the wall. Incidentally, the writing says, "Many, many tekelu farsen." Where's that from? Book of Daniel? Book of Daniel? People, when they read the Bible, they'll run into that. "Many, many tekelu farsen. You have been weighed in the scales and found wanting. Doofus." And I thought this is very interesting. I said, what would seeing dominoes on the wall mean? Well, first of all, it might mean that the wall is actually the floor. Make sure that your perspective is right. You know, you might think you're leaning up against the wall, but you might be prone on the floor. You might have fallen. You might not know what direction in which you are lying, in which you are. So there's that. And dominoes seem to me to be a metaphor for consequence. One thing leads to another. And like those dominoes, and we know this from OK Go videos, that one thing hits another and it can cause multiple effects, not just one. Right? And the white writing on the wall means you've been warned. And this guy, basically, the dominoes were obscuring the message on the wall, which is, man, you've been found wanting. Shut up. Let the other person talk. Maybe you don't know. Maybe this person who you won't let respond has the answers to your questions. Maybe the answers to your questions are at the end of an hour-long show that seems to be about nothing.
Is your show about nothing?
No. My show's about everything at once. Right? But that's still almost the same as being about nothing. It's certainly not a story. Is there a beginning, a middle, and an end? Maybe. Depends what you mean by that. The show began. But when did it begin? 5 years ago? 10 years ago? When I was born? 42 minutes ago? When did it start? When will it end? When the other show starts? When Sinner's Crossroads music starts? Like that? Oh, doesn't end. Don't shut it off. Don't shut the show off. I'm not done. And maybe I'll never be done. And maybe you'll never be done. Oh, when does it end? It just goes on and on like a loop. Sometimes when I was watching that movie projector, it would freeze. The movie would get jammed in there for some inexplicable reason, I guess because mechanical devices are imperfect. And when that would happen, the impossibly bright bulb would start to burn the celluloid. And it would do this kind of wonderful bubbling burning and make a hole in the film. And it was hard to stop it because it was so mesmerizing. Watching that go down, you go, wow, I'm never going to have to take hallucinogens because I just saw a wonderful, crazy thing happen. This might be the fourth reel of my movie of my life. It's just the bright light burning the celluloid away and making these impossible great patterns, you know, that maybe look like the end of the universe. Maybe that's what a black hole looks like. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe the projector's on too long or something. The sun, a star, is like a projector, and it starts to, I guess what happens is the film gets caught in the universe, and it burns a hole right through it. Now, what's on the other side of that hole? Who knows? I did not see all of the Disney movie, The Black Hole. I'm assuming Ernest Borgnine. He could be. Ernest Borgnine could be like the number 42 and be the answer to everything. I really don't know. And I like to think about things like that. Why? Because why not? I have this brain. I got to use it for something. It's like, you know, you got a paintbrush or a gun. You say, I've got to use this. It's meant to be used. I could do something constructive or destructive. Isn't that wonderful? The universe, life, blah, 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 philosophy, etc.
What are you saying?
Oh, I'm not. Am I? Or am I not?
I don't think you're saying anything.
does everything have to have content? And you know that from listening to this show that occasionally I just start making sounds. Now, those sounds also have a sort of meaning. What is it? Well, you give that the meaning. You fill it in. Isn't that wonderful? It's just like that game you play where you just have a blank and it tells you the parts of speech and you fill it in, Mad Libs, right? It's like ad libs, but it's a sort of madness. Isn't that crazy? You're not really ad-libbing, you're mad-libbing. It's insane that anybody would do that. And the way we would play it is that we would just discard the parts of speech, too. If you really want to go full Dada, just if it says noun, just disregard that. And just put, you know, painterly, when it really wants you to say corn. And it makes it a lot fun. You go, well, no, it doesn't make any sense. Does this whole thing make any sense? Does it? I think it's a lot more accurate to just have something random in there or a sound or something like that. That's how life keeps coming at me. Sometimes things seem slightly predictable, and other times I just don't see it coming. You know? I would have this recurring idea, and it's happened because this situation has happened to me a couple times. And that is that more often than not, our experience is this. You're leaving work at the end of the day. So you go, man, that was a hard day at work. Gosh darn that mimeograph machine. Okay, so you're at work in the past. Not everything has to be up to date. Or maybe you're just have, I'm working in an antique office. It's very hip. I work for a firm that's everything is classic old typewriters and everything like that, mimeograph machines. But it was a long day, you know, because we were doing the newsletter and doing the newsletter on a manual typewriter and having to white out things and everything. If it wasn't for Mike Nesmith's mother, life would be so difficult. And end of the day, you say, I just want to go home. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to get out of here. I'm going to get in my car. I'm going to drive home. I'm going to make some popcorn. I'm going to get out the 8mm old movie projector. I'm going to get out some old films that were shot when I was a kid. I'm going to watch those and eat the popcorn. And maybe I'll make myself a drink. I wonder what kind of drink I'll make. Maybe a cocktail. Maybe I'm not in the mood for alcohol. Maybe I'll make a homemade orange drink. A big orange drink, as Andy Griffith would say. I dropped my big orange drink. What it was football big orange drink. So, by the way I make that is you put orange juice and egg white, sugar, and ice. Put that in a blender and blendered up. And it's wonderful. They used to sell them in the mall. I will not say the name of the actual product, but that's how you make it. And so you leave work and you get in your car and you go, ring, 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 ring. You go, no, 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 no. No, I'm going home and I have it all planned out. I'm going to watch this movie. Uh-oh. I guess that's not going to happen. I wonder what happens now. And everything in your life starts shooting off on a tangent that's a lot different than you imagined it. Now, you can go with it or you can fight it. You can understand that this happens more often than not, or you can start pounding your fists on the dashboard saying, why? Because you didn't take into account the things that do happen, all the myriad possibilities of life. You just thought one thing was going to happen and you had a certain control. And so every time I get on a plane, I think about my dead playmates. I think that they got on that plane and they were probably thinking, I'm going to do this, that, and the other thing. Every time I begin a journey, I think, this journey might not go anywhere. This may be it. Am I prepared for it to be it? I have to consider it. I plan for the future, but boy, I don't count on it necessarily. I said, well, if it does come, I'll be ready. But if it doesn't come, I'm going to understand that too. I have to. Why me? Why not me? No one's ever gotten out of here alive. And everything is messy. Oh, friends, if you feel like your life is not going right, say, oh, I don't know, I'm making a mess of things. It's been a jumble to good day. You're fine. That's the way it goes. Don't assume that you have some control. You don't. You can have some control, and then, boy, things throw you a curveball, and what are you going to do? Anticipate the curveball. All right, bad analogy. Life throws mostly knuckleballs. Those you can't really predict what's going to happen. I could tell you. I could say, I could, if I was the pitcher, I could yell, I'm about to throw a knuckleball, and you still might not be able to hit it. If I told you I'm throwing a fastball, into the corner, you know, down and away or something, or a curveball, you might be able to anticipate it. But life throws knuckleballs, which is good. It's actually good for life's elbow. It's better. I'm pro knuckleball. I think the other ones, it wears out life's tendon, and they're going to have Tommy John surgery. And you don't want life to have that, do you? I don't know. Oh, maybe you do, because you got stock in a clinic that helps out life's tendonitis. My friends, we are all together in this wonderful movie theater, and we are watching stories, but we're not in them. We're in some kind of vast, weirder story. It's bigger. It has more characters. It has a plot that doesn't really ever go anywhere. It changes all the time. We are living the most fantastic movie. You are a star of this crazy thing that you're in. You are wonderful. It's, oh my gosh, I wish I could just... everybody that needed it, put my arms around them and say, it's all right. If you're feeling bad or you're feeling oppressed because you think something more is required of you, or you're not doing it right, or you have some sort of self-loathing for some reason, let me just tell you, I'm going to speak on behalf of the universe. Why? Are you the universe? No, but I'm in it. I might as well speak for it. Why not? I'm going to say, I think everything is fine. You're fine. You know, you just got this one life. Don't be your own enemy. You're going to have plenty of other enemies. Don't punish yourself. Life will punish you. Seek redemption. Seek a pure heart. You know, don't worry about beating yourself up doesn't make your heart more pure. You know, get right. If you're comfortable with you, you can be better to others. People that want to self-punish do a very interesting thing a lot of times. And what they do is they say, I'm not worthy. I hate myself. I want to punish myself. I must destroy something that I value. What do I value? Well, the people who love me. So if the people who love me are hurt, then I will be hurt. And so what they do is they set out to hurt the people that love them. And that way they know that will hurt them. Well, now that's not fair. Because then now they're hurting somebody else besides themselves as a way of getting to themselves. You see what I'm doing? They do that all the time. Just like when you're trying to get, let's say you're a mobster, and you say, you know, if you really want to get somebody, you threaten their family, not them. And I think that people do that to themselves, too. So if you really want to hurt yourself, I'll hurt those who love me. Oh, you can't do that. You can't do that. If you love others, please love yourself. So what if you're an awful person? Well, you know, maybe even awful persons aren't really loving themselves. Maybe they're not. Who knows? I don't know. What kind of advice are you giving? Oh, let's be clear. It's not advice. Oh my gosh. Let me be clear of that. If you go into a museum and you see a painting, and the painting is like a lady with a funny hat on her head, that's not advice. You know, that's just a painting. Supposed to make you have a feeling, give you an idea, open up your eyes a little bit. But the last thing it's saying is go out and buy a hat like this. And that's the last thing I'm saying is do everything I say or do what I say. I'm not. I'm just showing you pictures. It's just poetry. It's not meant to have a moral. A fox once saw some grapes, and he said, those are some mighty fine-looking grapes. And he reached up and he grabbed some, and he thought, I'm just going to take a sample of the grapes. to see if I want to buy some more. And the shopkeep came up to him and he said, "Fox, you are eating the grapes." And the fox says, "Well, they're sour." He goes, "Well, what are you saying? You ate my grapes, you have to pay for them." He goes, "No, I was sampling the grapes. You all factor that in. And why would I want to buy these sour grapes anyway? If I had sampled them and they were sweet, I would buy them. But I'm just taking a little now." And now, oh, they got into a big argument. But finally just said, "All right, you know, you're a regular customer." And the fox was like, "I'm going to buy some peaches. Because you had samples out like that. You didn't have samples out for the grapes. I had to help myself." "All right. But I tasted the peaches and they're good." The fox was right in this. And then the fox suddenly transformed into a beautiful princess and said, "Oh, my friend, you have done the right thing. And I was a princess in disguise the entire time. And now I grant you your kingdom." But it turned out the kingdom was a kingdom of horrible, scary, mechanical bug people on a planet far away. And the shopkeep said, "I just want to go back to my own shop. I just want to go back to my own shop." And he opened up his eyes and he was back in his own shop, because what had happened is he had sampled some of his wheat and it had ergot on it and he had been hallucinating. There was no fox. There was no beautiful princess. It was just the shopkeep having a bad trip. Oh, my friends, sometimes when we eat wheat, you get a bad reaction. And then what do? Then you turn maybe towards friends. Maybe my friends can help me. Maybe my friend is Hearty White. That's a type of bread. He can help me. "Will you nourish me, Hearty White?" "Oh, I'll do my best, please. But I'll tell you what, I'm just sandwich bread. You got to put something in between the slices. Peanut butter or not Vegemite, but something like that. I don't know. Pimento cheese might be good. I don't know. You can make a sandwich out of anything. Put a third piece of bread in there. Bread sandwich. The possibilities are endless, you know? And you know that all sandwiches have, there's something in there even if you don't see it. Who knows? Like a bug? Possibly a very tiny bug. I really don't know. Dust? Dust? Skin? Dust is skin. A lot of dust that's on your furniture is skin. Oh, that's horrifying. Yeah, I know. When I move into a house or something, you think, oh, this is the old lady's skin or something is on all the sills. My friends, I can't believe we've been together another week. It's just wonderful and blessed. And, you know, I try not to take any of these moments for granted. They haven't really been granted me until they're gone. And then I take them for granted. But before they happen, I don't, because they have yet to be granted. After the fact, yes, I was granted that. It was wonderful. But no, I'm very, very thankful. And I know that we all going through struggles. We don't know when strife is going to hit us. You could be going along one day and the next day is a natural disaster or something. That's why we got to be there for one another. Stop this sniping all the time. Open up hearts. It's imperative now more than ever that we start to see the world the way it really is. Confusing, unpredictable, fatal. So I just want to put out some love and kindness to you and try to help you so that you feel a little rested and you can go out there again and have the energy to have another day and to experience things and have more adventures. Oh, my friends, you have been listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in magical, mystical Rockland County, or online at WFMU.org. Thank you for joining me, my friends, and I will see you again next week.